Goeienaand, baie welkom by Sterre en Planete. Ons sê goeienaand aan Jim Adams. Naand, Jim.
Goeienaand, Henny.
En ons het ook vir Willie Koorts. Goeienaand, Willie.
Goeienaand, Alma.
Now, by the time this program is aired, Jim, Artemis would have been launched or is going to be launched. Because when we record the program, the plan is to launch on Saturday. But obviously that is yesterday. So we can't talk about a launch or a coming launch without being certain. But could you just take us through the steps? You know, we know about the VAB where the assembly takes place and then the crawler. Could you take us through the steps? What happens consecutively?
Sure, yeah. Well, you mentioned the VAB, that stands for Vehicle Assembly Building. It was built in the Apollo era, and it's where the rockets get assembled. All the various pieces get stacked together on a mobile transporting, a mobile transporter. This thing is so huge. I don't remember exactly how much it weighs, but it's something like 4 million pounds or something like that. And it crawls along this specially designed roadway, which is really large pebbles, maybe about half the size of a cricket ball. And it crushes them as it goes along. Traveling at about 1 mile per hour is its max speed. And it crawls 4 miles from the VAB all the way out to the launch site, Pad 39B, which is, of course, where some of the Apollo launches took place and many shuttle launches. And then this mobile launch platform actually functions as the launch pad for this for the rocket, and has to be refurbished, of course, after it gets after the launch. So we transported out to the pad for what we thought was going to be a launch last week, and they ran into some technical difficulties, and so they postponed the launch to Saturday, which, of course, by the time we air, will be yesterday, and we'll see whether or not it will be successful. If not, they're going to be very cautious. If not, then they'll delay it again, and they'll try and get it right.
Right, try to get it right. Do you know what the problem was?
Yeah. So the Space Launch System, the SLS, is comprised of a core stage with two solid rocket motors and then a cryogenic upper stage. And the core stage, it consists of four reconditioned space shuttle engines. And so these space shuttle engines, they have to be pre-cooled before we actually ignite them, before we actually start the launch. And the way they do that is they fill up the hydrogen tank, and then they bleed off a little bit of the hydrogen and begin to flow it through the engines. And they watch the temperature drop from ambient, which would probably, on that day, probably was maybe 35 centigrade. And it has to drop all the way down to, forgive me for mixing units, but minus 400 degrees Fahrenheit. And a little bit of hydrogen flowing through the engines did that for the first rocket, for the second rocket, but our first engine and the second engine, but it did not cool the third engine fast enough. And we think that there really wasn't anything particularly wrong. It's just that it's the first time they've done this. On the space shuttle, they had a closed system. So the hydrogen would flow out of the tank, they'd bleed a little off, they'd flow it through the engine, and then they'd put it back in the tank. In the case of the SLS, the hydrogen bleeds off the tank and into the engine, and then it just is exhausted overboard. Well, that system has a different temperature profile over time, than the space shuttle. And so they weren't exactly sure what to expect, but they didn't have enough time to cool all four engines before they would get to the end of the launch window. So they stopped and they said, we're going to recycle. We're going to try for a new launch window. And they chose, obviously, Saturday, which, as we've said a couple of times, is yesterday.
I did a quick conversion here. So minus 400 Fahrenheit is minus 240 Celsius. It's just
That's
still
pretty cold,
still,
huh?
Still damn cold, just for all practical purposes, yes. There was another a thing that I heard on some of the commentary is a possible crack. They first thought it was in a tank, but then later it turned out just to be in the insulation, and it was the air actually freezing on the cryogenic tank. Do you know anything about that? I thought that wasn't serious finally.
It's not. They determined that it wasn't serious. You spray this insulation on the external tank, and sometimes you get little cracks in it. And what that does is then allows the moisture in the atmosphere that contacts the tank to freeze up and create a little bit of ice. Of course, that's alarming because of the problems that we had with the Challenger launch. And so so people stopped and we analyzed that and we figured out what that was and ultimately determined that that there was no harm to the tank and no real significant loss to the thermal insulation properties of the spray-on insulation.
I had a look at the video stream. What was interesting for me was that sort of vapor that came off from somewhere at the top of the craft. What is that vapor?
So it's liquid oxygen and liquid hydrogen. Recall now there's actually four tanks on board this mission. There's a liquid hydrogen tank for the core stage, which is the big orange thing that you saw, and a liquid oxygen tank for the core stage, which is at the top of that big orange thing that you saw. And then there's a liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen tank for the cryogenic upper stage as well. And so every time you fill a tank like that, you get to full, and then you start to bleed off as that cryogenic liquid starts to warm just a little bit. You get gas, and that has to bleed off somewhere. And so, what you saw was the excess gases as the very top of each of the tanks warmed up. You start to see that bleed off, and of course, the one for the cryogenic upper stage sits on top of the core stage, and so it would be what you saw up top, very close to the Orion capsule.
What's interesting for me is that you say that they're using, is it refurbished shuttle engines?
Yeah. The space shuttle engines were designed to be refurbished, and they were used many times over the life of the space shuttle program. And now we have several in stores. I think it's like 36 that we have. And so we will use them four at a time on the core stage of the SLS. The disappointing thing, which Elon Musk is probably smiling about, is that the SLS program, the Space Launch System, was not designed to be reused. Just the same way the Apollo Saturn V rocket was not designed to be reused. So we have this core stage with the main big orange tank that you see in the pictures, and there's four RS-25 engines from the space shuttle at the bottom of it. It's connected to two 5-segment solid rocket motors. None of that is designed to be recovered. It will all fall into the ocean and become part of coral reefs or part of the environment at the bottom of the ocean as they are expended. And so the rocket will launch, they'll ignite the engines and the solid rocket boosters, and it'll push it off the launch pad within seconds. And then 2-3 minutes in, the solid rocket boosters will fall away and fall down to the ocean. And the core stage will continue to push the rest of the stack into space. When I say stack, it's the makeup of these pieces that turn it into the Artemis mission. The space launch system is the rocket. But as you put these pieces together to make a mission, then you can actually go to a destination. In this case, it happens to be the moon. So at the top of the space of the core stage, then, is this cryogenic second stage that we talked about that will create the burn that puts the service module, which is supplied by the European Space Agency, and the Orion capsule onto a lunar trajectory. So core stage gets you away from the Earth. The cryogenic upper stage pushes the rest of the stack into a translunar trajectory, they call it. What continues on to the moon is the service module, which also has a rocket motor in it, and the Orion capsule, which ultimately will carry astronauts. But this time around, it's just carrying dummies.
You were talking about the shuttle program, and it's actually interesting to see similarities between the shuttle program, as you say, the same sort of insulation, the external tank, the motors now as well. Just for comparison, I mean, we talked about this last week. The Saturn V's were, and I think they haven't been beaten yet, as the most powerful rockets ever. And we were sort of wondering, I think the SLS will finally beat it, if I'm not wrong, but also the actual motors, because Saturn V had five of them on, had five rocket motors, which were obviously different ones. How does those motors compare, and then the rockets finally, the SLS with the Apollo rockets?
Yeah, so the F5 engines, I think they were F5s, or maybe they were F1s. I can't remember on Apollo. Obviously, at the time, they were the most powerful rocket engines ever built, but they were surpassed by the RS-25 engines that were used on the space shuttle.
Okay.
And so the space shuttle, had two solid rocket boosters and three RS-25s. The SLS has two extended solid rocket boosters and four RS-25s. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the mission is different for the space shuttle. It was designed to go into low Earth orbit, carry very heavy payloads into low Earth orbit. And the SLS is designed to push the Orion and the service module out into a lunar orbit. So it's very different missions. How it compares to the Saturn V, that's a good question. I think it probably does beat the Saturn V, but probably not by much. I do know that it's 8.4 million pounds of thrust at launch for the SLS.
Sure. And Elon's Raptor engines and his Falcon Heavy and whatever, I mean, that's a different ballgame again, because it's a different destination again.
Well, yeah. I mean, he can customize the Falcon 9 to go to the moon, and I'm sure that wouldn't be a problem for him. But it is a different set of engines, and you know, the reason it's a Falcon 9 is that there are nine Raptor engines. But I also know he's working on other things, which is fantastic. I've said this before, as we go to the moon and beyond, we're going to go together. You know, we're not going to like try and compete NASA against SLS or NASA against any other country. It needs to be planet Earth going in collaboration and cooperation. And there's plenty of room for SpaceX to send rockets and payloads to to the moon, and there's plenty of room for NASA to use their SLS and Orion capsule for human astronauts that go on to the moon and maybe even to Mars.
Just one question on the beginning. You said about these cricket balls effectively being squashed. Is there a reason for that? Is that just to cushion the ride?
It's because they would crush everything else. You can't really build a roadway that would be that thick. And so it's actually, I think it's 2 meters thick of these large pebbles. And then underneath that, there's some sort of like a sand foundation or something like that. Just to be sure. And one of the people I met early on in my travels to South Africa is a collector of rocks. And so I managed, don't tell anybody, but I managed to scoop up one of the used pebbles and bring it to her in South Africa. And I believe it's now functioning as a doorstop in Grahamstown.
Jim, a modest question. How do they ignite the engines?
That's a really good question. It turns out that when you watch a space shuttle take off, you see all of these sparks. There's a spark generator. And you see all of that, and you begin to think, well, that's how they're lighting the engine. But in fact, it's not. Those sparks are really there to ignite any excess hydrogen or oxygen that would get out, so that it doesn't create a cloud that then ends up exploding. They just burn the excess off using these spark generators. The combination of hydrogen and oxygen into the thrust chamber self-ignites, and that's how they ignite the RS-25s. The solid rocket boosters have little explosive devices that ignite the solid propellant inside them.
Let's talk a bit about the so-called launch pad. I've looked at videos of the shuttles being launched. And what was interesting for me was the amount of water that is used to absorb the shock.
That water, a lot of people think it's to cool the pad, but it's actually not. Its primary purpose, ever since the days of Apollo, is seconds before the ignition, they flood the pad with many gallons of water, and frankly, I don't know how many, but it's like 100,000 or something like that. And the idea is that the acoustics from the launch, from the rockets, will be dampened so that the acoustic shock will not interact with the, bounce off of the bottom of the pad and then come back and interact with the operation of the engines or the rest of the rocket. So when they flood the pad, it's to avoid the reflection of the sound back up towards the rocket.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, that thing is loud. So as you now say, to be right there where everything is. I've also noticed that they've got these scoops that are lined with fire bricks. Along which some of the blast blows. That's obviously just to survive, to make the launch pad survive.
Yeah, it's called a flame trench. And so the flames go down and then are diverted sideways, as you say, so that we don't tear the pad up too much. Also, on the side, there's also these connector plates, which connect the umbilicals to between the ground system and the rocket. There's electrical connections, there's communications connections, and there's obviously, as we've talked about, there's the cryogenic liquid connections, and those all get pulled away at the launch as well.
I remember from the Apollo program, I read in the beginning, they had a fair amount of trouble getting the shear pins to work correctly. So So you've got to hold this rocket upright while it's not being launched. But at launch, you want it to let go.
Right.
If you make it let go too early, then it may topple over. So there was a fine balance between how strong the shear pin. So it looks like there are bits that are made to break at a specific amount of force. And of course, if they're too tight, then it may actually break uneven and also topple the rocket. So there's an amazing amount of technology just keeping the rocket upright and then making it release at the right moment.
Yeah, and for the space shuttle, it was when I was working at NASA, one of my bosses was General Charles Bolden, who had flown the space shuttle.
He was in South Africa a while ago, yes.
Right, and it was his challenge to me that actually started me traveling to South Africa. But I was in his office one day, and there was this enormous bolt that was cut in half. and it was the diameter of a coffee cup. You know, it was big. And so I asked him about it, and he said, that's one of the shear pins. And the hold downs for the space shuttle. And of course it had been sheared off by a bolt cutter right at launch. And as you say, Billy, if it doesn't work, then you got a real mess, because now you've got rockets lit and you're getting ready to ignite the solid rocket motors. And so, those have to work. And I guess as an astronaut, he was allowed to keep one of them after he got back.
I just want to know, when the launch happens, how far are the nearest human beings from that launch? I'm not talking of human beings behind glass and things like that, but how far are they allowed to be?
No closer than 4 miles. So, and most of the people will be at about 5 or 6 miles away.
And obviously, you've witnessed quite a lot of launches. How far are you then from the launch pad, obviously in a building?
You're closer to the launch if you go to one of the viewing sites. If you're in a building, it's set back just a little further, because obviously they don't want the building to be damaged by the sound and the sonic booms and that sort of thing. So the buildings that I've been in have been set back a little bit. The closest building I've been in for a launch was the NASA press site, which is a very historic site. You can find pictures of it all over the internet. But you know what you do is you're sitting there in the press site doing your job, and then just, you know, when they get down to T-minus 10 seconds, everybody runs outside to watch it.
And the motors again, I suppose they're made out of titanium, or is it something different?
Oh, yeah, some very special materials that the motors are made out of. And titanium is certainly one of them, because they want it to be light. It has to be strong. It has to withstand very high temperatures.
Right. I think we have to close off there. Jim, people can find you on the Facebook page.
So one last thing, Henny. You know, if the SLS has launched on the day before. Mm. It is now on a 25-day journey to the moon, and will have just at the time that you air, will be 1 day into a 4-day trip to the moon. And then the next big thing is Artemis, for the Artemis mission, is the Orion capsule and the European service module will be entering a lunar retrograde orbit, and it'll hang there for several days before it journeys back and completes the cycle.
Ja, besonderhede.
Ja, mense kan bel SMS, WhatsApp en verkieslik WhatsApp 0724579208.
Right, thank you Jim, thank you buddy. Was a lot of interesting information. As jy met ons verskakel, en dit is deur die internet, ons e-posadres is sterreplanete@gmail.com. sterreplanete@gmail.com. Volgende week is ons terug. Tot dan, alles van die beste.